This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to www.accessradiotaranaki.com.
Welcome to Wahine Atua, a space made for and by women in Taranaki. Whether you're tuning in at home, work, or with a cuppa in hand, you're in great company. Join us now for chats, laughter, real korero, and a whole lot of wahine power. It's Wahine Atua, on now here at Access Radio Taranaki.
Good afternoon to you and welcome to Wahine Atua for another week. And today we carried on from last week because we're talking about pay equity and pay equality. Marcy, I'll let you introduce our guests if you can do, because of course we've got Amanda back. And Amanda, you can introduce.
We certainly have.
Kia ora. Great to be back.
And we've also got Sue with us. Hi, Sue.
Kia ora. Thank you.
So would you like to introduce yourself? Tell us who you are and a little bit about your background and why Amanda thought it was awesome that you'd be here.
Well, thank you. So I'm Sue Carter. I'm an organiser for E2. So we're talking about pay parity, and Amanda invited me to come along because I have been working on the pay equity claim since 2014.
Can you tell us who and what E2 actually is?
E2 is the union. Yep. For it's the largest public sector union. So we look after care workers, from care workers to aviation, huge amount of different industries. But what I work in is health. So I look after women who are community support workers, caregivers, disability workers, and the fabulous people at the hospital, such as orderlies and cleaners.
Cool. Now, you might be able to tell Sue that I'm not actually a Kiwi. Well, legally I am, but you can tell from my accent that I'm from England. I'm from the north of England, where the union movement was quite strong. So I'm from a town called Barnsley, and I think the most infamous, famous union from where I'm from was the National Union of Mine Workers. So the miners' strike of 84, I was a 16-year-old, so that's still very front of mind for me as far as the union. But I've always grown up in an environment where unions were your friend and they were there to help you as a worker to ensure that you'd got everything that was fair and right and equal, I guess. So I'd always been in a union, a public service union. So just as a, is union membership a thing here? I'd never really, I don't see
union
it.
Union membership used to be compulsory. We were all in the union. It was just standard. And in the 1990s, the government brought in the Contracts Act, which said you don't need to be in the union. You can negotiate yourself. And, I was in my 20s then, and I can recall vividly thinking, yeah, I could negotiate with my boss, you know. But what we lost within that process was the collective voice. But that's coming back, right. You know, it is. And you know, we've been increasing our membership, especially over the last 10 years, you know, with this pay equity, which would be our largest campaign.
So that's where we get the individual employment agreements and the collective agreements. Is that the background of those?
That's right. Yeah. So cool. A collective agreement is negotiated by delegates from the work site and union officials. Yeah.
Cool. Interesting.
And you have more power because you know, the more members you've got, the more voice you've got. Yeah.
Yeah. The voice of many.
Yeah.
So with the, what's been happening recently with the article that Amanda had written and the thing that we'd spoke about. You said, I said last week that I could recall health workers getting pay parity.
Hospital health workers.
So what was your involvement with that?
Well, no, I wasn't involved in that because that's the nurses' union. As we know, we won the legislation in 1972. This has been a struggle for a very long time. But we filed back in 2011 for a pay equity case, and at the time it was the National Party. And at the time we did a fabulous campaign where thousands of women, there's 63,000 care workers in this country, and we ran a rally
Let's
where
just
they
pause there. 63,000
thousand
care workers, predominantly women.
predominantly woman.
That's a, I can't work out that percentage, but that's a lot.
It is a lot. 150,000 teachers, though, which is, yeah,
Yep.
but who were also fighting the
Predominantly
same
women.
battle. So we took groups of women the same, all in the same week, to go and visit the MPs. And this is something that we don't do enough of. You know, the MPs need to talk to the constituents, and when they go to Parliament, they have to talk about what the constituents are raising with them. So we did it throughout the country all in the same week, and it had a really big impact because every MP was standing up and saying, "I met 30 women, I met 10 women, I met whatever." And what we did is we talked to them about what does their job look like. Now, back then in 2011, I think the minimum wage was $13.75, and that's what a caregiver got. And so when you break down what their actual skills are and what they do, you know that they do it because they care. It isn't, it's not for money. So
It's a
when you look,
vocation more than a career,
that's
eh?
right, it's about the heart that they do. And that's how they've been taken so advantage of, but my view. But so we started off going around to rest homes, meeting groups of women, having public meetings, and comparing their wages with a prison guard's wage. So similar job description, completely different clientele, but you know, they worked in a team. They're allowed to restrain. Not that anyone wants to restrain in an aged care, but sometimes, you know, with dementia and different illnesses, it becomes a problem. They have penal rates and all sorts of exciting things. And their rate back then was, we were looking at around $26 an hour.
So
So we
double.
started going around talking to these women and saying, you know, they didn't have to have degrees. You don't have to have a degree to be a prison officer. The likeness, the similarities were numerous. So I would go around and I'd talk to this group of women who, remember, were on $13.75 an hour, and we'd say, this is what you deserve. This is what your pay equity is about, the value of the work that you do. And when you break down what you actually do, it's valuable to society, but it's also valuable to individuals to have that support. It's a mark of our society, isn't it? How we take care of our vulnerable.
Yeah, well, that's what
So,
they say, isn't it? It's a measure of a society on how well our most vulnerable people are cared
yeah.
for and treated.
So at those meetings, there was not one single meeting that somebody at some point said, "We're on $13.75 an hour. We're never going to get 26. You are dreaming. Never going to happen." And you know, we couldn't get them to strike. That taking action was a huge thing. Not because they didn't want to stand up to the bosses and the authorities, but they wouldn't leave the person that they care for.
That's
So
right.
hard to get that action. I honestly believe it's why it's taken so long to get through this process.
So that was 2011. So if you fast forward, whatever, 14 years or so,
2017,
to, yeah.
we won the pay equity settlement. So it was a settlement with an expiry date, and there was a lot of argument about why we're accepting a pay equity settlement with an expiry date. But our argument then was, well, the way I thought of it was that it was a good idea because then women actually got that pay rise in their pockets and it changed their lives. We had many meetings where a woman was saying to me, I had no chance of supporting my child to go to university. But once they started getting those pay rises, which ended up at 28, 25 an hour, they not only were able to live better, but they valued themselves. They got to understand that actually the work that we do is valuable, and it's not pin money from the 50s when, that's how our economy ran. It's women support all of families, so they have a right to be paid equally and equitably. So unfortunately, in October 2023, we did a lot of work. We did a lot of we filed as soon as the pay equity settlement expired in 2022,
So,
we
can you
filed
just
in the
explain to
court.
me why the expiry date? What was that
Well, it was
about?
the National Party who said, okay, we're going to give it to you, but it's going to have an expiry date. And the deal was we couldn't take a true pay equity case, because a true pay equity case had to have data. So we weren't allowed to actually take a true case through the courts until 2022. And it expired on the 1st of September 2022, and we filed that day into the courts for a true investigation, a
So it wasn't
true
the fact that they said you
comparison.
could have a pay rise, but only until this date. It was the case that had the expiry date.
Well, sort no, you can have a pay rise until this date, and then all gloves are off, and you better work with whatever government. And we had a Labor Party government who said that they were going to give it to us. So, we there was faith there that we would achieve that.
So
But
I just question it because I thought that's what you meant, but I thought surely not.
yeah, well, no, it had an expiry date, and but the plan was that all the work we did all the work during that 5 years that we just couldn't file, but we did all the work, and that work looked like we had 5 milestones that we had to reach, and each milestone was then signed off by the Ministry of Business and Innovation, i.e., the first milestone was the arguability that we had this case, that women are paid, that pay parity was not equal. I'm not probably saying the right words there, but yeah. And
Sorry,
then we
Amanda,
had
I
to do.
just cut you off then. You were just about to say something when
I think I
I.
was just trying to clarify the same thing. So basically, people got a pay rise. All these women who had been on 1375 got a pay rise to 2850 or something
It
for
grew
5 years,
each year. Yeah.
and then had to renegotiate. And so you went in to renegotiate, did all of the work, and then in 2025, last year, when you'd already signed off all the agreements with the Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment, they just stopped it.
Actually, they stopped it in 2024, is when they got into Parliament, didn't they? The National Party got in 2023. Yeah. And the first 100 days, they threw out the pay equity. Even though we were at the table signing the papers, it had all been agreed, the employers had agreed, they had a task force, of course. The first thing they did was throw out that task force. And so the employers and the unions had worked together, which is a history in itself. They had worked together and they're determined through a matrix. So we did interviewing, and I was blessed enough to go around the country and interview these women. And then all the information of all the skills and all the things that they do. For instance, with a home support worker, very treated like they are the bottom of the rung for in that health system. However, these women, they work alone, and they are often the only human being that that person sees, that old person who can't get into a rest home because they're not bad enough. You have to literally almost be not of sound mind or not mobile. So they're in their homes, and this person's the only person that they rely on to make sure that their health is not deteriorating, that they get the cares and the support that they need. That was the one that blew me away the most, the skills that they need to
Yeah, for
understand
sure.
the medical skills, the recognizing a deterioration because of medication or because of not hydrating or all sorts of things. Not to mention the stoma bags and the colostomy bags and all the stuff that is complex, you know. Yeah. So all of those skills got put into a matrix, and then that matrix determined what the value across, you know, for in healthcare, they crossed it over for three in the first place of comparators. So we had prison guards were one, similar job description, different clientele. We had fisheries officers, so totally different job, but they all three of these male jobs were jobs you don't have to have a degree to do, right? But the skills were compared to what they have to do,
So
and the
that's entry level. So they're looking at the comparative of the education entry level and the
that's right.
skill level to be able to do the job.
Exactly. Yeah. And then the third one was customs officers. So all three of them are people facing. All three of those jobs deal with people who are in a perhaps an anxious state or feeling vulnerable. And caregivers won hands down, like the skills that they have to have compared to, you know, all of those others that work in teams for a start, you know,
Do you
they
think that that's one of the reasons why pay inequity exists to begin with? Because so many of our female-dominated professions rely on empathy and understanding and connection and lots of complex calculation and emotional work that women are seen to do kind of naturally, I suppose, for want of a better word, and therefore it's not valued as much.
I think that's definitely part of it, in particular with caregiving. So, you know, in the 50s, woman, if you got married in the 40s and 50s, you got married and then you stayed at home. You were expected to stay at home and your husband would support you, and that's what made you a good person. But I guess, especially after World War II, when we had a lot of our men came back and they were disabled in different ways, health wise, they were put into homes that were run by churches usually, and women were bored, like, you know, they were bored being at home. So they would go and volunteer in the first instance to help in these places. And then they began to realize how invaluable they were to actually these places operating. And so they got small amounts of money, but it wasn't, I mean, it was literally called pin money. It wasn't, you know, but now women, we provide for all of families. So, you know, working now is not about earning a little bit of pin money. It's actually, you know, surviving and supporting families and, you know,
I think just picking up on
participating.
your point, Amanda, about those skills that carers particularly need, and that as the perception is that women have them more than men. I know a lot of men who also have them, and I
Yes.
know a lot of women who
Hashtag not
don't.
all men. They're really hard to measure.
That's
They're
right.
really hard. They're subjective. You need to be able to see those in another person. You need to be a type of person to see those skills. Whereas, so for instance, I was talking to my hairdresser about this. I've been to hairdressers this week. She said, "What you've been talking about on the podcast?" So I was telling her. And I said to her, "You know, you're a tradesperson. You've served your apprenticeship. You're a tradie. You run your own small business. You need to buy tools. You employ people to help. You train up apprentices. Do you get paid the same as a carpenter or a plumber or a builder?" And she went, "No." She said, "I probably get paid less than their apprentices." I'm like, "So that's not equitable." I said, "That's what pay equity is." And she just said, "No, it's never going to happen." And I said, "Yeah, look at COVID, right? Hairdressers, we all really wanted our hairdresser."
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, I just missed one hair appointment during lockdown. I was lucky. I'd been just before lockdown. But you remember that that's the one thing that people were talking about. "We need the hair. I want to go get my hair cut." You know? And
Your worker.
it were like, so, but she just didn't. She's like, no, it'll never happen. Yeah, I am. I guess I am a tradesperson. I said, you've got a trade. You're skilled. You've trained for it. And she told me when she did her apprenticeship, she scored in the top four in New Zealand. She was amazing. You know, and you're like, but the expectation from her was, no, she's not the same as the men's trades.
And I guess like that's exactly what Sue's story just made really clear too, right? Care workers thinking, oh, well, that's never going to happen. And the thing was that over, more than a decade, working away collectively, all together, pushing, 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 that finally got there. And then all of a sudden it was taken away. And I think the pay equity changes that came in last year and changed the law, that was the most egregious part of it from my perspective. And that was one of the things that the People's Select Committee said. One of the most egregious parts of it was that after, more than a decade of working on the claims, all of those women, and I think it's there were 300,000 women that had pending claims, and over 200,000 of them, and you can probably speak to this, Sue, teachers and care workers were like they were about to get
We were right
the
there. We were
change
at
right
the
there,
table
and then
signing the
bam, it's gone
documents.
overnight,
So
right?
the impact of that is you've got people who are really optimistic that something's going to happen, then the rug's pulled from under them. Why would they want to stay in that profession?
Because they care, which is what they're
Because they
taking
care.
advantage of, right?
Because they
It's
care.
why they did it, because they care. They thought, oh, they'll go without, they're all right. And you know what? That is the thing. Women will, when we get disappointed, when we get shit on like that,
That's
we
just what came into my mind. I said, do you mean when we get shit on from a great height?
then we have to carry on because that is the load that we carry. We have to carry on, but we don't forget. And this government has to be voted out. The only way we're going to get pay equity back in is if we get this government out.
But I
And
think for
I
us,
have real heart, we will.
I think for me, what I took away from the podcast that we, the last one that we did was we need to raise the awareness of the unfairness of this. Because it's seen it on the news, it's disappeared thanks to everything that's happening elsewhere in the world. It's disappeared off the news, it's disappeared, nobody's talking about it. So I think just raising the awareness, but having a full understanding. And so that I was incensed last week. And now hearing what we've heard again, I'm even more incensed. What is it that we can do when we're talking to our fellow women? And our friends, just to raise the awareness of this.
Well, here in Taranaki, we have a group called Unions Taranaki, which is all the unions come together. So we've got the teachers' union, the caregivers' union. We have a we well, we're about to start a monthly stall at the seaside market to start getting that information out there, and we invite people to come and join. We'll have in this next year, there'll be a few really good rallies that we'll be putting it out there for people to come and have your voice heard. And what we have to say is, if you're, we have to stand strong that we are the ones in power. The people that vote are the people that have power. And so we've got to empower these every woman to make sure they do vote. And not only make sure they vote, but make sure their families vote and vote for what matters. The reality is they had already put the money aside. It was already agreed, $12.8 billion. That's been quite publicly said. If they had have paid all those women and those teachers that $12.8 billion, that money would be back in our communities. We
If you
wouldn't
get it, you
be
spend it.
struggling. Exactly. Especially women, you provide for families, So it's such a false economy to give it to as tax cuts and, to tobacco companies and all the things that they did, when look at how we're all struggling, That
You, I was speaking
12.8 billion.
to some friends who were social workers who, when they got their pay equity and they got their back pay. They didn't put their back pay into savings. They spent it on the kids. They spent it on the house.
Okay.
They spent it on the family.
Yep,
It
buying
was
cars,
things that
buying
had been
things
on
we
the wish
need.
list for God knows how long. It got spent.
Exactly. So, I mean, it just doesn't even make sense, does it? It's, but yeah, we just have to, we want to, my message all year, I just hope, you know, there's one thing when you piss off a woman, we don't forget. We might carry on, but we don't forget. And
Yeah,
that's
Tracy's
what I'll
nodding
be doing
massively
this
in the background. So,
year.
Amanda, you got something to say?
Yeah, I just think that the call to action is really important. Like last week, you asked me, what can people do? And I've been thinking about it all week. And I think the first step is to understand the issue yourself. So, listening to podcasts like this is awesome, and reading some information coming out about it from the unions, but also from the People's Select Committee on Pay Equity, and just whatever you can get your hands on. What happened and why does it matter? And then support the action that is happening, whether that's again through the union. There's a petition that you can sign, share all the things, like all the things, all the content that's coming out, and then actually tell three people about what's happened. You know, educate yourself, select the action that's happening in the community, support the action that's happening in the community, and then tell three other people what's happened, because
Vote
you're right,
this government out.
particularly, and then you know, make sure that people are enrolled and people vote. But I think because the law changed happened under urgency in the budget cycle, et cetera, et cetera, there wasn't actually a lot of coverage about it. And so if you're not working in this area, if you're not in one of those industries directly affected, or you're not a massive politics geek like I am, you kind of, it just got lost in the noise, right? So yeah, making sure that you understand what's happened and amplifying it, telling
When
people.
I've been speaking to the wahine around me about this, and I've actually said that this law was done under urgency, and they're like, what do you mean? I said, well, it's been done in secret. That's been the thing that's really pissed people off. What do you
Consultation
mean?
whatsoever.
And I said, you know, that it shouldn't have, any legislation like this should really go through and be available for the public to have an opinion on. I said, and they just disrespected everybody by doing it under urgency. And that's the one thing that has really annoyed people. The whole thing has, but that's the one thing I think that will get people into action, is that we've been, as a community, we've been not given the opinion, given the opportunity to actually say, hang on a minute, this is not fair.
Yeah, that's right.
Actually, throughout in 2025, so the agreement had expired, but it got extended while we went through the process of proving pay equity. By them throwing it out in 2025, it meant not only did it mean that the woman didn't get the money that was sitting there for them, it also meant that no employer has to follow those qualifications anymore. So if you went and got your level four, you're probably less, so that's a qualification. You're probably less employable now because they want the cheap ones.
Hey, so Tracy's just given us the rack up. We're getting to the end of time. I mean, that 30 minutes only lasted 10 to me. So can we just finish? Amanda, can you just reiterate those three things again for us before we close?
Learn about what's happened, about pay equity, about how the government stopped the claims and why it matters. Support the actions in the community from the unions, sign the petitions that are coming through. And the third action is tell three people
Cool.
what's
So on
happened.
that note, let's tell three people.
Thanks for listening to this episode. For more information and others just like this, head along to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.
This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.